Broadcasting from the Hip Hop Weekly Studios, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Civic Cypher, where our mission is to foster allyship, empathy, and understanding. I am your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am tired in a mug. Do y'all have kids? Because I got kids, man, and yeah.
Listen, I know. Listen, shout out to you, Q Ward, for
my bad, y'all.
Letting us know.
Kids, man.
Well, listen, outside of taking care of kids, we have taken care of putting together a fantastic show for you, I believe. So there's a lot to stick around for. Today, we're going to be talking about something that's very interesting. There was a situation that happened some years back where a police officer went undercover. He was black, went undercover. And then the police that weren't undercover thought he was just a regular black and treated him accordingly. And so
that's crazy.
Yeah. So he got hurt pretty bad, beat up.
Treated him like a regular black.
Yeah. And they didn't know that it was him. And so, you know, they stomped him out. It was some police brutality. But then he turned around and sued the police, and then he won. So the police beat up the police, then the police sued the police, then the police won money from the police that was paid for by the taxpayers. So that's an interesting story you're going to stick around for. Also, we're going to be asking the question that a lot of people are asking these days, and that is, were things better under Donald Trump? Well, we have...
I just almost flipped the table over when you asked that question, because it's ridiculous on its face.
Well, you know, people are asking the question, so we're going to do a little bit of fact checking. We're going to go through some parameters, and we're going to use a little help from an online source. So a lot to stick around for, but first and foremost, like we always do at this time, we're going to start the show with some Ebony Excellence.
Shall we?
I think we shall. Today's Ebony Excellence is sponsored by Major Threads. For innovative, fashionable sportswear, check majorthreads.com. And today, we're reading from Good Morning America, and we're going to tell you about the youngest teacher in America. Growing up, Shania Muhammad said her home was always built on the foundation of education. By age 15, she graduated from the University of Oklahoma, and by 16, she became the youngest teacher in the United States. Speaking to Good Morning America, Muhammad reflected on her childhood at home, crediting part of her success to her older siblings. Quote, I remember seeing my older siblings study for the ACT in the eighth grade, she shared. She goes on to say, my sister, she really started it all. She was 16 when she graduated high school with a 4.0 GPA. So shout out to his whole family. Quote, my brother graduated from the number one private school in Oklahoma. They really set the example. She continued, for Muhammad, her own education journey shifted during the seventh grade. Quote, my dad knew I was really, really advanced. We just started with ACT prep that summer, realizing I could actually write college level essays. He said, oh yeah, let's go ahead and throw you into enrollment. Muhammad later became the youngest student at the University of Oklahoma, an achievement she said made her feel like I was an undercover superhero. Quote, I'm going in here. People don't know me, she said. That's when I go out into my regular personal life and everyone knows I'm 13. After graduating college at 15, Muhammad said she was offered a teaching job when the school owner reached out to me. Quote, at the time I was 15 years old, Muhammad said, and I was like, they want me to actually like teach? Like an actual lead position? For practical reasons, however, Muhammad shared that she decided to wait until she reached 16 when she was able to obtain a driver's license to drive herself to work before taking on the job offer. And so that August, that's when she started teaching. And we salute her again, the youngest teacher in America.
I know who I want to be like when I grow up.
Heard that. All right. So the police beat up the police and get money. So, around here, we are critical of the police, and there are a lot of people that push back on that. There are a lot of people that, you know, feel like police uphold society. Police keep all the bad guys from taking over, as though no one would follow the rules if there were no police. And I don't believe that is entirely true. I do respect, you know, the role that police, I guess, have had historically. But I'm also a person that is very critical of them, because the good that they've done has disproportionately affected one group of people, and the bad that they've done has disproportionately affected another group of people. And our call is for all of policing to be better on this show. That's me being as diplomatic as I can be, right? But stories like this really illuminate the shortcomings and the failings of police. It really illuminates police culture. It really illuminates a lot of what we, and by we I mean specifically Black and brown people in this country, are trying to let everyone else know is true of the police. So we're going to share a bit from the Black Information Network, and we're going to break this down for you. So again, from the BIN, a former St. Louis police officer was awarded $23 million after he was beaten by his white colleagues while working undercover at a protest in 2017, The Guardian reports. Luther Hall was pinned to the ground by officers and beaten with a baton in 2017 while he was undercover at a protest following the acquittal of Jason Stockley, a white cop who fatally shot the 24-year-old Black man Anthony Lamar Smith. Hall suffered permanent injuries and post-traumatic stress disorder from the incident. Officers also allegedly falsified the incident report regarding Hall's assault, writing that he was, quote, knocked to the ground, striking the concrete while the police were making arrests at the protests in 2021. Hall filed a lawsuit against the city of St. Louis over the attack. He later reached a $5 million settlement in the case. Hall also sued three of his former colleagues, Randy Hayes, Dustin Boone, and Christopher Myers, in 2022 for their alleged involvement in his assault. On Monday, April 15th, St. Louis Circuit Judge Joseph White awarded Hall over $23 million in a default judgment after Hayes failed to respond to his lawsuit. So we're going to stop right here. So the brief recap here, again, is that there was a protest, and you know, there's a little bit more in this article that really does show, and for those that want to read the whole article, you can go to, again, the Black Information Network, but there's a little bit more in the article that shows exactly what the police's intentions were going to the protest, right? So first off, again, a white officer kills a Black man, there's going to be protest, right? They're sending a Black officer there as an undercover agent to, I don't know, monitor the situation or whatever. I don't like that, but whatever. And then the rest of the uniformed police officers are sending text messages back and forth to each other. And they're very violent, incendiary text messages. They're talking about how they're going to, you know, beat people up and how they're going to, you know, just really hurt people, you know. And all that was submitted as evidence on behalf of Luther Hall, right? That they went out there with the expressed intention of hurting people. They find this officer. They don't know that he's an officer because obviously he's not dressed like an officer. He's Black. He looks like a protester. That's the point. They beat him. They kick him. They kick him in the face. They put him in the hospital, right? And he gets a chance to see what it's like to be a regular Black. And then the officers find out about it, and they try to convince him not to make a big deal out of it, of course. And he's like, no, this is wrong.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And then so there was a cover up in two. And this is the crazy thing about it. If this officer takes the initial little bit of money and walks away, we never hear about this story. If this officer, I mean, who knows? There's a number of ways that this can go, and we don't hear about the story, right? And that's what we do on this show. We tell a story based on data, because the data suggests that these sorts of things happen frequently, but the stories themselves don't often make headlines. You know, when they do, they're bright moments and everyone gets galvanized around a cause. Oh, Trayvon Martin. Oh, sometimes. George Floyd. You know, sometimes. Yeah, you're right.
Sometimes they are not bright moments and they're very divisive and cause, you know, the almost gang like tribal divide, us against them.
Yeah.
Playing the victim card. You know, one bad apple, you know, that kind of easy to disprove narrative that gets pushed out in situations like this, and the other officers trying to convince this officer to just let it go is a police culture thing.
Yeah.
Right? You're one of us, so you shouldn't pursue this against the rest of us.
Right.
We're sorry.
Yeah.
We can make it right. Just don't tell anybody, kind of thing.
Right.
And you know, you expressing, the article expressing that there were text messages sent. You know, we're going to this protest with the intent of causing harm to discourage other people from protesting. Is, you know, when you ask to what end, that's the goal.
Yeah.
You do enough harm, people won't keep showing up to these things.
Yeah.
I never get numb to these stories. It's just as difficult to have this discussion every time that we have to.
Yeah.
And the sad thing is that there are still people out there that will pretend that the bad faith actors are the
minority,
the very the bad very apples. Few.
Yeah. That bad apples narrative is super tired, y'all.
It's, at some point you decide with intent to ignore facts and data.
Yeah.
There's an entire wing of our political system that has brought forth attacks on the idea of information and data and facts, and would love for us to believe that essentially nothing's true.
Yeah.
There are no facts, and they get to shape narratives on the fly, and they have tens of millions of people that are okay with that, that subscribe to that.
Yeah.
It's a very, very difficult time, man.
Well, in this instance, again, those text messages really give insight into police culture. And a lot of times, you know, when we cover stories like this on the show, we do our best to illuminate the culture that shapes these actors, right? Because it's one thing to say that, you know, there's a few bad apples, right? But, you know, I remember the episode we did where we really highlighted the good apples, the police that looked around, saw the toxic police culture, the bully culture, the abuse culture, and decided to do something about it, and how those good apples were harassed.
Yeah, there's no safe haven for the good apples.
Right. And so
again, discourages good apples.
And so there's the culture.
Otherwise, good people succumb to the culture because I have a job and I have a family to feed and I have bills and I'm quote unquote doing well here. I'm being promoted. I'm being celebrated, and I don't want to be the pariah amongst my colleagues.
Yeah.
So even the good apples sometimes just shut up
and go along with
they
it.
They might not fully subscribe to it, but in order to maintain your job and not be pushed to the margins and outcast and treated like crap and harassed and bullied by your colleagues, you kind of either got to fall in line or at least be complicit and shut up.
Yeah. So the problem with this is that this culture is bolstered and supported by those of us on the ground, the civilians, the people who are beholden to and feel like we're protected by the police, for us to look at them like the heroes, look at them like the good guys. And to be fair, I understand people that do that. I understand if you have had limited interaction with the police, then you just assume they're doing their job in the background, taking care of all of the riffraff, right? And most people, that's your reality. You don't interact with the police with any real frequency unless you get pulled over, right? Or you might see them standing guard at a baseball game or whatever. Outside of that, the police just exist and society works, right? So you don't know what you don't know, right? But for people like us, where the police will go out of their way to harass us, people that, you know, the police would seek out in a protest and beat their heads in and put them in the hospital, you know, we know otherwise. I remember this might have been 1992. So what would that be, 32 years ago?
Yep.
32 years ago on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, there was a scene where Jazzy Jeff was like, listen, man, I already know to put my hands up in front of the police. He was like in a courtroom and the bailiff came, whatever, to swear him in. And he put his hands up and he's like, I already know to put my hands up in front of the police before I get 6 warning shots in the back, right? And, you know, people don't say that on TV, on a comedy show, unless it has already been well established in Black culture for the prior 50 years. So we're talking now, what's that, 70, 75 years-ish of abuse by the police, so much so that
much more than 75 years.
Yeah, of course. But I'm just talking like if I'm being generous, you know what I mean? If that show had, you know, the previous 50 years to draw on, my math is not exact here, so don't hold me to that. But what I'm trying to suggest is that we are aware of police abuse, police brutality, police overreach, police getting off with a slap on the wrist if anything happens to them. The police really move through our communities with impunity. And for people who don't live in our communities, subscribe to our culture, really indeed know what's going on in Black and brown neighborhoods, they can look at us and just say, well, you know, Black people are all the bad people. And, you know, there's data that people use that is misinterpreted and misrepresented to suggest that Black people commit these types of crimes and these types of crimes or whatever. And, you know, we argue back that no, Black people are overpoliced and as a result arrested those types of crimes. If you really want to look for a violent culture, look at the police, because police are by far and away the most violent in terms of domestic abuse. And that goes underreported. I mean, this is all there, you know what I mean? But when you give these people the support, the community support, when you prop them up as heroes, they escape the scrutiny that they really deserve. They are public servants and civil servants. And without that scrutiny, they can move with impunity, and they can harm and hurt and ravage communities, Black communities, certainly. Yeah,
it becomes a bit of a power vacuum.
Right.
And there's very little that normal citizens can do to push back against that type of unchecked power. It's a really, when you think about it the way that you should, it's quite terrifying.
Oh, let me take it a step further. So one of the things that we do is we give them more money. You know, when all the weapons from Desert Storm came back to the U.S., they were sold at auction to guess who? Police departments. And then you have the militarization of the police. So now they feel like they're soldiers.
And to what end?
And we're right. The only war that they're fighting.
Who is this war against? It's not against quote unquote criminals. There's not some showdown that's going to happen at noon between
the bad guy and the good
bad
guy.
Guys, no,
just
and
regular
police.
Peace. Yeah.
You know, so it's this militarization to patrol our neighborhoods. We have to use all this aggression and weapons on someone, we guess, because the movie like showdown at the place out in the, you know, on the outskirts of town where there's no collateral damage and it used to be a warehouse, but now it's the headquarters of the criminal masterminds, the underground of organized crime where all their henchmen are with all of their assault rifles that the police have to now be prepared to fight against.
That's in the movies. That's not real life. Real life is people who
that criminal organization does not exist for real.
Yeah.
And even when it does, not at the level with which our police have prepared. Like they're preparing for this war that is never going to happen. And we further financially invest in this upcoming showdown fiscally, annually, to the tune of billions,
I think,
per state.
I think I've heard something. You're going to love this. And I believe it to be true, but if all the police departments in the United States of America was a military organization, it'd be the third largest military on earth. So and that includes, you know, weapons and tanks and helicopters and everything like that. And so the truth is that, and we say this a lot on the show, is that the real source of crime is poverty. And if you don't want crime, you don't need police officers with tanks. You need to deal with poverty and impoverished conditions, meaning economic opportunities, educational opportunities, et cetera. It's proven. It's proven time and again. But people have grown accustomed via propaganda through movies over the years, thinking that police are always the good guys, to think, well, no, if we give less money to the police, then we'll be more vulnerable. And that's just not true.
That's safe. And all of that is, I mean, all of those are symptoms to the greater, I don't like to say problem, because I guess we benefit from living in such a society, but it's all a symptom of the greater issue, which is capitalism.
Yeah.
Right? These are some of these problems. The remedies are very, very obvious and straightforward and intentionally ignored because people are making too much money doing things the way that they do them.
Oh, yeah. The privatization of prisons is definitely one such facet of that very argument. So here, we'll read the rest of this just so that you get the rest of this story. Mr. Hall had to endure this severe beating. And while that was happening, he knew it was being administered by his colleagues who were sworn to serve and protect. This is from, I believe this is his lawyer, Mr. White. Hayes didn't respond to Hall's suit, which he was served while in prison over the assault. Hayes was sentenced to 4 years and 4 months after pleading guilty in 2019 to using excessive force. Boone was handed down over a year in prison on civil rights charge for his involvement with Hall's assault, while Myers received probation. Hall previously said the officers wanted to hurt protesters during the 2017 demonstration. Quote, I could have been anybody, but being black definitely didn't help, Hall said in a statement following Monday's verdict. Hall's attorney, Lynette Petruska, said, quote, Luther is grateful that Judge White took his brutal assault by fellow officers and its life-changing consequences more seriously than the city of St. Louis and the St. Louis Police Department did, unquote. So, yeah, man, I think this kind of flies in the face of that, you know, that narrative that police are, you know, getting the bad guys. No, the police are getting whoever.
It flies more in the face of those who have those bastardized flags on their cars and homes.
Those blue lives
supporting
thing.
The blue or whatever that
back the blue,
whatever that is.
Line, yeah.
Cause it's nonsense, right? There's this pretending to be for our military, for our troops, for our police.
Yeah, patriotic.
Yeah. Until they too are the victims of this system that you created. And all of a sudden, those lives don't matter as much as you'd like us to think they did.
Yeah, well, by the way, that flag, that thin blue line flag, that violates United States flag code. So for all of you out there listening who are mad about Kaepernick kneeling because he disrespected the flag, if you're also flying that thin blue line flag, I suggest you take that down because that indeed violates U.S. flag code.
That was never what they cared about, yeah. Ramses, so they're not caring about what you're saying right now either.